Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as the Hotel series and Pretty Ugly. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes the award-winning novel Dibs, Since September, and Move on, Melinda. With us today, we have best-selling author Samantha Downing. We are here to talk about her new novella, Sleeping Dogs Lie, as well as her incredible career, including her everything that's going on, but especially Sleeping Dogs Lie. Welcome, Samantha.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. Tell our viewers and our listeners, if you're just on audio, a little bit about yourself and then a little bit about your new novella.
I write thrillers, and I've had three novels come out. The first was My Lovely Wife. Then He Started It, and then For Your Own Good came out in 2021. And Sleeping Dogs Lie is a novella, which is the only new thing I have coming out this year. So, and that just came out. It's about a quarter of the length of a novel, of one of my novels. So my novels tend to be 80 to 85,000 words, and this is 20,000 words. And Sleeping Dogs Lie is about a dog walker in Northern California, which is where I'm originally from. And I live in New Orleans now, but Shelby is a dog walker, and she finds one of her clients, a dog owner, not a dog, but her a dog
that.
Owner.
Clarify.
I want to clarify there are no dog murders in this
there
book.
There is no dog harm in this book.
Correct. And so she finds one of the dog owners dead and calls the police and gets swept up in the investigation. And that's what it's about.
I loved that it was about a dog walker, and I like all of your, I would. This is the one time I've wanted my dog to join me.
I was expecting Tubby to be your co-host today as like your sample dog.
I was going to try, but he does not behave very well.
No.
So, but I think one of my favorite parts was just like how into your description of being a dog walker and being at a dog park really was. And the huskies' desires for certain types of dogs.
This is a family show, Jen. You can't talk about things like that.
This show's never been a family show.
Okay, then we go on. Because, the big dog who wants to do the little tiny dogs is just hilarious. It's like, well, you know, he really thinks they're cute.
The heart wants what the heart wants.
Not his heart.
Absolutely.
Not at all.
So I had to wonder, like, are you a dog person? Have you been at the dog park witnessing these things? Have you had to pull your dog off another dog?
No, I do not have a dog. I can't where I live right now. And other than COVID, I typically travel too much. So it makes it difficult. But my brother owns a dog walking and dog sitting company. And so he's the one that suggested to me, I was trying to come up with ideas for a book. And he's the one that said, write about a dog walker. We know everything. And so I said, okay.
Really?
Because, well, he's also a dog sitter. And for the people that hire dog sitters to come and stay in their houses, the most important thing in their house is their dog. So they're letting, you know, basically a stranger stay in their house to make sure that their dog stays in the home that they're comfortable in and that somebody's there to take care of them when they go away. So dog walkers really do know everything, and they typically have keys to everybody's houses. So this is who they are. And so he said that dog walkers know everything. So they would be perfect for, you know, a protagonist in a book. And so I ended up writing a novella instead of a full book and kept it contained.
Did he get mad? He's like, what? I didn't get a full book out of this?
No, he didn't get mad. 85,000 words.
No, he didn't get mad. But the area that it takes place in is where I'm from. And the area that is talked about is where he does a lot of his dog walks. So
yeah, because it's like in the
park, all the locations are real. The dog parks, even the coffee shops that I mentioned, and the shopping center. All of that stuff is real. It all actually exists in that area.
Well, and I live in Southern California, but I've been to Northern California and I've visited some of these places. So I don't know about the specific coffee shops, but I give you points for authenticity and realness. So people up in the Berkeley area, be checking around, and certain Stater Brothers, be aware of angry people coming up to you in the deli counter, because apparently that's a thing too. I loved that part.
You know, I'll be in Northern California next week, actually. Oh, so the whole time I was like, oh, I was so close to being there while we were doing this interview. I loved the like, oh, you know, like it's nice, not Sausalito nice, but nice. Right. And I'm like, oh gosh.
Exactly.
And for some of us, exactly. It was just a kind of Pepperidge Farm cookie.
Yeah. That, I mean, that whole, the whole area just so completely exploded with the Silicon Valley. So mm-hmm. It was, when I was growing up there, it was kind of just a sleepy little suburb. And now it's like, you know, right next to San Francisco and very, very expensive.
Very, very expensive. Yes, we're visiting family there, and it is
the kind of place where people hire dog walkers and dog sitters.
Yes. You know, I recently had to hire dog pet sitters for my mom's pets because she was away for a while, and I didn't realize how expensive it is, and the like 20-page application I had to fill out per pet.
It's like getting them into college.
It really was. They had to know everything. And I understand it. They had to know everything about the pets. And I was just, and yeah, it was just such a weird thing for me. And then I'm like, and then you get a key to my mom's house and like all of this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, they're at the house without anybody. Just in my mind went there to before I read this. I'm like, that person could do anything.
Yeah, and he's been doing it for years now, and he books up fast. If you're leaving for the holidays, he's probably already booked. I don't know, but like with those vacation times when people need pet sitters, they're scrambling because everybody goes away at the same time, you know?
I'm considering a career change right now because it just sounds like a business I should be getting into.
It's
quite a fancy enough place to do it, but I could probably drive an hour north or south and get it good.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's very few people can do it because they have a home life. Yeah. I mean, he spends half his month sleeping at other people's places. So you have to have a certain lifestyle to be able to do that. You can't have small children and be off pet sitting 2 weeks of a month. Like, you know?
I've got to go watch this husky. Sorry, son.
Priority. Bye.
Exactly.
Well, Samantha, I was interested earlier. You were saying this one was much shorter than the others, about a quarter of the length of that. Did that arrive naturally, or when you were writing a novella, were you going, okay, I want it to be about half the size of a novel, a quarter the size of my novel? Because the length that you said for your novels, between that you said 80 and 85, for a lot of people, writers, we know what these words mean. The average reader is like, I have no idea what that is. Like, are your novels on the relatively average size for thrillers? Are they shorter? Are they longer?
The books are about average, between 300 and 350 pages.
Right.
I think my chapters are very short, so the page count is actually a little deceptive because there's always that page in between
that
the chapters.
Halfway, yes. Yeah.
So where you're like, look how thick
my first
this
one.
Is.
Yeah, My Lovely Wife came out at like 400 pages, but it's not 400 of solid text. They're short chapters, so it
moves
a lot.
Well, that also gives
faster.
The illusion that, yes, it's a very fast read, too. Yeah. People are like, right. Oh, I can't believe I read a 400-page book in one day.
Yeah, and they do that. And it's sometimes funny because whenever we get books and we're trying to figure out, since we read basically a book a week for the show, we're always like, okay, well, how many pages is it? Oh, that's long. Okay, but there's a lot of white space, so you're good. Because I know we've had some of them where it feels like every chapter is two paragraphs and there's a new chapter. But it's just all stylistic. So I know some people are like, oh, well, how many chapters is it? And I'm thinking, chapter count means almost nothing because you could have 40 chapters and it's short, or you could have 20 chapters and each chapter is 30 pages.
Exactly. That's why I only think in word count. I don't think in page numbers and I don't think in chapters. So it's just, I think My Lovely Wife was probably my longest book. That one was closer to 90,000, but I average about 85.
Yeah. And it's funny because like, I don't really think about that sometimes. And for those of us who were told, okay, you've got to hit it under 100,000 and that doesn't seem like that's that hard. And then certain books, we think of things like The Stand that are massive tomes, but most books don't end up that way. But for doing a novella, was that something that your publisher said, yeah, let's get something shorter, or is it just the idea felt like it was that length? Which came
first? No, I had the idea for it, and I just thought it would make for a good novella as opposed to a novel. I guess it could have been a novel, but I think at that point, I would have had to bring in other elements of her life, and it becomes far more expansive. This is a very contained story about one dead person and one dog walker that gets swept up in it. I couldn't make this exact story 80,000 words. The story would
no,
have to
you
be
would
a lot
need
bigger.
A lot of yeah. It would have to be a lot bigger. It would have to have more characters. I love that this had like a very core. Mm-hmm. Small cast. So we got into the heads of who we were supposed to be in.
Exactly. So it worked from that. And it worked well. I'm not someone that has to cut a lot of words from my writing. My writing is pretty sparse, and I don't write 100,000 books and have to cut 100,000 word books and have to cut to 85. I write right up to that line and
you're like, I can't cut
it.
Anything.
I have to add anything. That's the worst. If I have to add something.
No.
Something
have you been asked?
Everything I needed to say. So I don't know.
Have you ever been asked to add anything? Like, have editors said, yeah, we need you to make this just a little chunkier?
No. I've been asked to add something and cut something else, like to replace something with something. But not to add for word count purposes.
Yeah, nobody's asking you to fluff it up. Like, oh,
right.
You
like
just
say,
need 10,
tone down
words.
This storyline, but pump up this story.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
We probably all read stories where it feels like there is filler. So I appreciated a novella just for novella's sake. And I know sometimes you see on Twitter, does anybody even read novellas? And I love them. I love them as like palate cleansers between longer books where I need like a brain change. But I also just love something that's so delicious about a story all in one setting. You get that like that instant gratification of all to the end. Because usually you can't, if you're invested in a story, it's going to take you a while to get through it. But not with this.
Yeah, because we all have lives. It's hard realistically to read a book in one sitting as much as we want to, especially, you know, we read a lot for the show. We read a lot in general. And there are so many books that I'm like, it's 2 a.m. and I want to keep reading it because I want to finish it, but I can't. And what I love about novellas is you can. Mm-hmm. You can look at the clock and go, okay, it's 10 p.m. I can read this and be done by midnight.
And I think it's it's a different experience, a more satisfying experience in terms of story than a short story.
Yeah.
Can be, you know, is its own art form. But a novella has just a full story of a beginning, a middle, an end, and it gives you the complete. And especially in the thriller genre, you have the twists and turns. You still have the ending, and how it all turns out. And so it is like reading just a really short thriller.
It is. And this one worked. I was so excited. I read it before Jen did. I was like, have you read it yet? Have you read it yet? Have you read it yet? And I knew because Jen is such a dog lover. And I love animals too, but our family hasn't had pets since we've had kids. Like, we can't handle both right now. It's like, my kids keep asking for pets. I'm like, you'd step on a hamster. So no, you can't have one yet. You want a dog? Clean your room first. You can keep your room clean for maybe a week. We can talk about a dog. So like, I knew she's a huge animal lover, and I knew that she would just love this one. But I was nervous throughout. I'm glad we had that warning for everybody. The dogs are fine. This isn't the
dogs are
with.
Fine.
It's all good.
The dogs are fine. I'm not killing any dogs.
You and any
oh,
you
gosh.
Your other books, or are dogs in trouble with some of your other work?
No.
Okay, good. Good. Good to know. See, that's always a good disclaimer. Samantha doesn't harm animals in her books.
I don't.
And it's tricky sometimes because you write thrillers. I write horror. And every once in a while you get like right up to that line and you're like, uh-oh, I'm going to do something and everyone's going to hate it.
They're going to be mad at me. This is fiction, guys. No actual animals were hurt or maligned. We're good. Besides, no one would be adapting that to a movie, and that's what's going on right now for you, Samantha. Is that correct? A couple books are being adapted to movies.
Yeah, a couple of my novels. My Lovely Wife was optioned by Amazon Studios and Nicole Kidman to be a movie. And For Your Own Good, that one is actually the paperback of that coming out at the end of this month. But the hardcover came out last year. That was optioned by Robert Downey Jr. and is going to HBO Max to be a limited
with Greg series. Berlanti.
Greg Berlanti.
Really?
So that's, I mean, when I did my homework on you and I saw
the Berlanti's DC.
I know. Robert Downey Jr. and Greg Berlanti there.
Marvel in DC, my main right there.
Yeah. So that I'm excited to see either one. I just want to see something on the screen and see how they adapt it.
Just watch, waiting for which one hits it first. Because I know a lot of people talk about like, oh, your movie's being adapted or your book's being adapted. But the timeline can be a real long time. And sometimes they get optioned, but then nothing happens. So it's like crossing our fingers, one of them hits and we can watch this soon.
Exactly. And that's always the problem with the option is they option a lot of things, but it takes an extraordinary amount of money and resources to then go into production.
And probably a whole lot of people to agree on one single vision.
Too. Yeah, and they need the timing of it. They need this, not just the cast, but the crew. I mean, it's a lot. So what they put into production, what they choose to put into production is for their own reasons and what they need and what they're looking for and what people are watching or whatever. So you never know. You just keep your fingers crossed.
It's just magic. Yeah. It's just you cross your fingers and go, I don't know. Did you freak out at all when you heard the names Nicole Kidman and Robert Downey Jr. associated with your work? Were you just like,
oh, yeah.
What
yeah,
we,
absolutely.
Oh
I mean, just like, okay.
Oh.
They read my books. That's weird.
So are they associated as producers or as people to be
as producers? Yeah. Neither one has been cast. So I don't know who would be in the cast, but Robert Downey Jr. has a production company with his wife called Team Downey. And they partnered with Berlanti to produce it and for HBO Max. And then Nicole Kidman's production company, Blossom Films, teamed up with Amazon to do My Lovely Wife. So no idea on the casting at all.
Now, see, we like to do dream casting, so I feel like we can do it for Sleeping Dogs because that one, nobody's big name is attached to it yet, so they're not going to get mad at us for messing up the casting. Who do you visualize Shelby as?
That's a tough one because she's supposed to be, you know, in her early to mid-20s, and I'm not sure I know a lot of actresses.
I was just going to say, that's below my age range.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
I think of like Emma Roberts. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if she's getting in her, I don't have no idea.
I think she's in her 30s now.
She looks like she's in her 20s, so I'll say.
Yeah.
Because I always think of actresses that are like in their 30s or closer to 40, like Rachel McAdams or.
Right. Exactly. I know, I'm always like Anne Hathaway, except when she was like 25.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Well, especially
like when I think of My Lovely Wife, I think of because it had they would compare it to Mr. and Mrs. Smith meets Dexter. So okay. Of course I think of Brad and Angie in their prime early Mr. and Mrs. Smith days.
Still
you know?
In their
they
prime.
Are. But the last
But I mean was- in their prime as a couple. You yes. know, like
right.
10 or 15
right now,
years.
I don't think getting them to work together would be, that's probably
no,
not
and they're right.
And you don't want to do like those de-aging things to make them look like they did 10 years ago. Nobody wants that freaks me out. I've seen that a few times now. I recently saw a movie with that and it had an older actress and a younger version of herself. And it just, they were next to each other and I just couldn't, I was just going.
It's strange when they do that. It's really strange. And then, because you know you're looking at a computer, but you know they don't look like that. You know there isn't the plastic surgery in the world that's going to make anybody look like that.
Yeah.
But
well, there's a part, and I think it's Captain America: Civil War. So back to Robert Downey Jr., where he's standing next to a younger version of himself, but it's presented as a computer simulation. So even though we're aware of the computer version of it. It's like, oh, it's supposed to be from his memories, but it worked because it was like, oh yeah, you're looking at it. So when Tony Stark's looking at a younger Tony Stark, it's fine. But the other one I saw, it wasn't supposed to be like that. And I couldn't place the actress. And then when I did, I went, well, no wonder because that younger version doesn't match what she looked like at that age in my head. My head just was like checking out of all of it. So We just need to get young, actual young people, maybe some unknowns, get them their big break.
Wait. I just thought of one. I love that actress who played the lead in Queen's Gambit.
Yes.
Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yep.
Yes.
Who's like a massive star now, who just is in, you know.
I think in Northman right now, because I just saw the preview for that, and I was looking at Alexander Skarsgård screaming a lot and wearing animal furs, and I'm going, I want to watch it. I'm just not sure I can handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jen's like, no.
Well, I think that's going to be bloody. So, Samantha, Sleeping Dogs Lie is your only release for this year. You're obviously hard at work on novel four. Is there anything you can tell us about that? Like, how's it going?
Book four.
I like that you took a beat. You're like, well.
This is book four 2.0.
Oh, boy.
Because 1.0 I threw out.
No! And so
that's, at what point did you throw it out?
It was done. It was done and turned in, actually. Oh, and I still threw it out.
What happened?
I decided I hated it and I didn't want it to come out. And I told my agent, I will be embarrassed if this book comes out.
Oh.
She said, okay, then it has to go.
Well, that's a good agent to actually get your back like that. But what did your editor think when they were like,
Did it get to the editor?
Yeah, it got to the editor.
Did it get to
the cover
design? So then it was like, you know, if you do this, you won't have a book coming out till 2023. There's not enough time to get one done for 2022. And I said, okay, then that's the way it has to be.
Well, that's amazing. And like good artistic integrity on your part to say.
So no. Every time I thought about that book, I had just had a bad feeling.
Book is making you sick to your stomach thinking about it and then going, okay, I've got to keep working on this and it's going to be released and my name's on it.
And then you're going to have to do press and be like, hi, I've really got to back this book.
So my actual book it is done and we are in revisions and it will be out in 2023 for sure.
And you're happy to put your name on this one.
Yeah. I'm much happier with this one.
How different is it from version 1.0? Is it
completely different. Everything about it.
So I want to go back to 1.0 and ask at what point, like you finished it and then went, no, were you feeling no as it went? Or did it just, when you finished, you went, this isn't what I want. And there's no saving this train wreck.
I was feeling every time I sat down to write it, that it was work.
Oh,
and then I was forcing the words out and I just had to get it done. And it was, I was writing it during the first year of the pandemic and I don't know why I had started it four different times and had ideas that I threw out and ideas that my editor didn't like. And so it took like a long time to even get to the idea in the first place. And then it just felt like slog the whole way. So, it didn't, I guess I wasn't even inspired by my own book. I wasn't like loving writing it. And I don't know. I just was nothing about it was good.
I think, you know, we get this, you know, Allison and I have talked at length about different things in our own writing process. And sometimes, especially like that first year of the pandemic, you get all this like weird juju attached to a piece where you're like, I'm going through something traumatic and I'm writing. Those two things might be very different and not connected, but like you bring it with you to the table when you're like, oh God, I've got to write this book and the world's ending and blah.
And blah.
And blah. And blah. But I've got this word count. I've got to like,
yeah.
This is why we're called Vox Vomitus. Sometimes it is.
And I think what's hard, like you mentioned, oh, there was this and the editor threw it out and that can really derail you too. I know I've had that happen where I really liked a beginning of something and then I was told, no, this isn't how it should be. And it just kind of messes up the whole process after that because it's never like any chapter or any part of the book is separate from the rest. It's all threaded together. And then it's like, all right, well, I guess I'm going this direction with it now. And is that as strong a direction? And who knows? But again, it's like, well, the book is done. But yeah. In my case, I haven't thrown it out. It isn't going anywhere yet, but it isn't like in a trash file yet. So I guess it still has a little bit of hope. Not a lot, but a little bit of hope.
It has hope. So
this is the second time I've thrown a book out. So I'm known for it.
Now your reputation.
At least my editor knows me for it. Cause the book I wrote after My Lovely Wife, which was supposed to be book two, we threw it out, and I had 2.5 months to write another one. And I had to make deadline, and I did. And he started it. So
I'm finishing a book from start to finish in 2.5 months.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Did you sleep at all?
I slept. Once I get going, I mean, I write 2.5 months is not, I don't like 2.5 months.
Yeah.
But I can do it. I mean, if you look at it this way, when I'm in the middle of a book, I try to write 1,000 words a day, at least 6 days a week. So theoretically that should be done in between 90 and 120 days.
Yeah.
If you're feeling it.
If you can get those thousand words out, and then it just becomes a matter of the revisions afterwards. My preference is to have 6 months. So I could write a book and then have time to actually look at it and revise it and change things before it ever gets to my editor. 2.5 months, I don't have time to do any of that. I just have to get it done in hand. So 2.5 months is not good.
But you got it done.
And it's rare I write more than, I mean, if I were to write like 2,000 words a day, that would be a lot because I'm not a plotter. I'm a pantser. So I need time to like think about it.
Woo! No, and I know for me, half of my writing is reading what I've already written just to kind of get in that mindset. Okay. So tell us though about book two, 1.0, that also has never seen the light of day, or was the new book start to finish similar to it, or what happened?
Oh no, they were so completely different.
Completely different.
That's when we learned I cannot be a plotter because my editor had asked for a synopsis for book two. So I didn't even know what it was. So I had to Google it. And I wrote a synopsis. I had no idea what a synopsis was. I never wrote one before. I wrote a synopsis where I just made up some stuff because I'd never done it before.
Yeah.
And then I wrote a book exactly like the synopsis and learned that having a synopsis makes me write, makes the book predictable because I'm telegraphing everything because I know what's going to happen.
Oh.
So the book was exactly what the synopsis said. It just didn't come out good in its final. So we don't do synopsis anymore. We've learned.
Good. And I hope all editors learn from this experience.
But I love this so much because first off, I'm just shocked you got your first one out without having had to do a synopsis because half the time, even when you're just querying, you have to do a synopsis. And I don't know how when you first got your agent and got published with your first book, that they managed to get past that stage, but I'm kudos for you that they didn't ask. You're like, you didn't need it. I don't do one. No synopsis. So for people who are like, what's a synopsis? It's like a blow by blow.
It's the ninth circle of hell.
It is in writing them. And a lot of authors hate doing them because they're like, oh, but it spoils the ending. But I know agents and sometimes editors want to see them because they want to see that you can stick the landing and you don't just have a really great opening. And then the book's like, crash and burn somewhere down the line. But I have never heard someone say that, oh, the synopsis made my plotting predictable because I was telegraphing it. And I love that because I know so many people are like, oh, well, you pantsers and talking down to us like we're these morons who can't think creatively or whatever. I just know I personally can't be creative in an outline form. That's just not how it works.
I can't either.
That's not how it works. And I love hearing that for someone who does something like what you do, where there are these twists, that's still spontaneous too.
Yeah. And I am far more creative if I don't know what is supposed to come next.
Yeah. I love being surprised when I'm writing personally. Yeah. Like I love when I'm just like typing, I'm like, oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Sometimes it makes sense. Sometimes it doesn't, but that's what rewrites are for.
Exactly. fix it in revision. But not if you only have 2.5 months.
Not if you only have 2.5 months. There's plenty of times in my writing process where I just highlight things and then like add a note that's like, make sure this makes sense later. And then I just keep going.
That works. And sometimes though, when you have to do something and you have to revise it and you're going, where was I going with this? And sometimes that's the problem too, because maybe that was a pivotal moment and now there's just no pivot.
Right. Right. I do that. I start, I'd write my books in one Microsoft Word document. That's it, the whole book. Yep. And then at some point I open up a separate document and I start making a list of like the little things that are supposed to be clues or hints or something that I need to circle back to. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of times I add things that don't go anywhere, but I have to go back and delete them. And then there are lots of things. And then when I'm looking for a plot point, I can look on my list and say, oh my God, this fits perfectly. Look, I'm such a genius.
I knew
all along I was going to do this.
Totally plan this. Totally.
Totally. And so a lot of times I'm throwing stuff into the early draft that may or may not go anywhere in the end, that it may come full circle and become like that crucial aha moment in a thriller where you're like, oh my God, I did read about that pair of red skates in chapter 5. And now look, they're really important in chapter 70.
They were the murder weapon the whole time.
Totally.
I guess I always think like I love thrillers and I love mysteries, and I always panic when I think, oh, I should write one, because I feel like I would need to know what the end is and like who the killer is. And I usually don't know those things going into anything. So I love that you don't know. It gives people like me hope that you don't need to know the end of the mystery.
Yeah, it just requires more revision, because in thrillers that are going to have twists, because you have to make them make sense, and the clues are planned. You have to earn the twists, right?
Yes.
So it has to make sense to the reader when it happens, and it can't just be out of nowhere. Somebody, you know, is actually alive when they're supposed to be dead, like, or whatever it is.
A hidden,
you know,
twin.
Yeah.
Well, and I laugh when you said it has to make sense. I'm like, I've read some that didn't, because I mean, I appreciate that you would say, go back and remove things that don't need to be there because they don't ever pay off. So you don't have any like Chekhov's guns just laying around going, eh, it's just a nice gun. We don't mind.
But what about that gun we saw in chapter 4? That seemed important.
About the red roller skates.
Exactly.
Are there any roller skates in any of your books? Because now I think the next one needs
to be. There are no red roller skates yet.
Roller derby. Skate to the face.
Oh, gross.
I'm falling here. It's gross.
Like, yeah.
That is. That's like a slasher movie death.
Yeah.
It was. Roller skate versus an ice skate. The roller skate's a little bit more of a bludgeon, whereas the ice skate straight across the neck, that could be bad. I don't write these kind of books, can you tell? I write romance and science fiction. Nobody's getting murdered with ice skates. But now I kind of want to write that too.
I know. I'm like, I should probably write that down.
I know. I kind of like the ice skate thing.
I like the ice skate. And
especially if it could come across as just a tragic ice skating accident, like between like, you know, ice dancers. Oh no, his throat was slit, but maybe it was just an accident gone.
Dancers.
It was just that high kick she did.
It was the high kick.
It went across.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't know enough about ice skating to go, is that possible?
I know a little bit, but
I know about high kicks.
Well, yours are not wearing ice skates. Jen is a dancer, for people who are going, what high kicks is she doing? Just not in ice skates.
Not in ice skates.
But not preferably in roller skates either. But now I want to see like roller derby, but Paris dancing. And then that goes terribly wrong too.
Well, that's the whole point of a thriller. Things are going well, and then it goes terribly wrong. Terribly. So book 4, 2.0 is at your editor, correct?
Done, yeah.
Done.
Going through revisions.
Perfect.
Well, good. Not done with revisions, but done.
Yes. Yeah. So at what point do you start in your brain to think about the book after that? Do you wait until all of the revisions are done, or do you start in the back of your mind telling yourself another story?
No, I start keep just staying open to ideas and having ideas, because I, as a pantser, I start a lot of things that I throw out, and I,
or entire book.
20,000 words is my make or break point, which is funny because it's the same length as the novella. But at 20,000 words, I know whether that story is big enough for 80,000 words, and I know whether I'm even interested in it. Like, I could be bored in 20,000 words. Yeah. So I have countless things that I've thrown out at 20,000 words because I'm not into it. I don't love it. I can't, I have to be able to see the path for it. Mm-hmm. Like it, that the story is going to get big enough for another 60,000 words.
Right.
And a novel's a commitment, not just for the reader, but for us as a writer. We've got to live there for 80,000 to 90,000 words forever.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, and be there through editing and revisions. And then again, putting on a happy face and talking about the book in press afterwards.
I think that you can't, one of the intangibles of writing is, at least for me, the characters that, and the parts that I absolutely love to write are the ones the readers respond to. So if I'm not feeling it when I'm writing it, somehow that comes through in the writing for the reader as well. So I try to always, if I'm bored writing something, I need to find a new angle for that scene or for that chapter. I need to find another way into it. Because if I'm bored writing it, they will be bored reading it.
Yeah.
I totally hear that. And sometimes it is hard, like, especially if you've been rereading your own stuff for a while, where you go, am I just too familiar with it that it's lost its sheen? So it's like, I've got to tell myself sometimes, don't read this for a while and come back to it with new eyes, because sometimes those two things can get mixed up in my brain and its ability to kind of evaluate gets just muddled. So, but I do laugh because you're like, okay, 20,000 is my make or break point. And yet you have two finished novels that you're like, go away. I don't want to talk about this novel.
That obviously went past the 20,000 word mark.
Seriously, what I'm thinking is we just get you a new pen name and release them under there. And then Samantha Downing doesn't have to be dragged down by that. But can still kind of bring in a little bit of the side cash. Just new pen name. And
they're terrible, though. They're terrible. They're
pulp
terrible.
Thrillers. I've read plenty of terrible books that sell quite a good cover can sell a lot of books.
That is very true.
We've said that way too much. Really. Yes. This is a beautiful cover.
It's a great cover that you have.
Yeah, covers have really changed now that everyone does their shopping online, even if they're not buying from Amazon, even if they're buying from a bookstore, a lot of people are ordering online. So you have to be able to see it in that thumbnail picture. Mm-hmm. That thumbnail picture is like everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you need to be able to read the title, or you need to be able to tell instantly what genre it is. Like, you know when you're looking at a rom-com, you know when you're looking at a thriller, you know when you're looking at a horror, because if that's your genre, you click on it. If not your genre, you ignore it. So, and you keep going. So you've got to be able, or if it's a Western, you got to be able to see that in a thumbnail. So it's very challenging for those who design the covers.
Yeah. Well, and I always just wonder then how readers then can tell the difference between one they've read and one they haven't, because then they end up all being so samey that it's like, sometimes I know at one point I thought, oh, I see this cover a lot. And I thought it was all the same book, but it wasn't the same book. It just was so similar that my brain just made it all a generic book. But the other thing besides Amazon and shopping online are things like Instagram, where bookstagrammers are featuring the books. And it's like, if your book is photogenic, it can help. So we just get you a really nice photogenic cover, fake pen name, and maybe, you know, that alter ego.
You don't have to do any press for it.
No.
Could all be very mysterious.
Yes. Well, we do have people we know who write under pen names, and we're like, we want to interview you, but how do we do this without revealing your secret identity? And we haven't figured that out yet because we use video. So
right. You need like a curtain.
I know. We're like, we're going to do it. And guest today.
Yeah. You know, they just wear a mask. That's it.
Yeah. Well, not the mask that we wore when we had Josh Mellerman, because that didn't disguise anything. That was a sleep mask and I looked like a panda. You were steampunk. We were fine. It didn't disguise anything other than make it look like goofballs. So I don't think that would help. So Samantha, we will have you in like full, maybe sequins and spandex, and then like an opera mask,
or like just like behind a screen and have one of those like voice things, like a
yes. I have no idea what you're talking about. This is not Samantha Downing.
And then she could be you could just talk about how much you actually hated the books, and people would be like, oh, this is very controversial. Now I need to read the book that even the author hates it.
That's like a sales technique.
It's a sale. It's like when people post their bad reviews, mm-hmm. It could sell. Like,
look, the number of people who, what was it? Like, I fell in love with the coronavirus. Was that one of them that was going around for a while? Where it's like a green guy and everybody was curiosity clicking and buying this like 99-cent book. I'm sure whoever wrote that is a millionaire by now, because everybody's like, what? I fell in love with the coronavirus. Yeah, it worked.
Gross.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It is gross. But people click on stupid stuff because they're going,
oh, I click on plenty of stupid stuff. But
yes. Well, and I usually send you the ridiculous covers, but I don't click on them to actually purchase them. I don't go that far with it.
It's because you're responsible financially.
I try to be. I don't have money enough to be ridiculous that way. Let's put it that way. That's more accurate.
So, Samantha, when is book 4.0 due out? Is it next? I'm like, it's
in 23. My last one came out in the summer, so I believe it will also be in the summer, but I don't have an exact date yet. But the paperback of For Your Own Good will be out April 26th.
Nice. Yep. So For Your Own Good is one of the things that I just recently purchased after I finished Sleeping Dogs Lie. And I plan on reading that when I am on the airplane.
There's the book.
I know. I'm stocking up on a ton of books for my trip. My 4-day first time I've traveled since COVID started trip, which I plan to just like read the entire time, I think.
Nice. Nice.
I love it.
And pretend. And that, but you can do it like among other people now instead of in seclusion. Yes.
I know. I'm just like hiding in my house.
Exactly.
Totally different experience then. And yes. even being on a plane and being like, I'm reading on an airplane. I love reading on airplanes, and I don't even know why that is. Like, how is it different than reading in my own house? But it is. Totally different.
It is different. And I never connect to the Wi-Fi in airports or airplanes. So there's no, and then nobody's talking on a cell phone. So it's for me, it's like a digital free zone, because there's nothing else to look at. There's nothing else to do.
Well, Samantha, you have been amazing. Thank you for coming on the show. We love Sleeping Dogs Lie. We can't wait to read the rest of your work. And we will be keeping one eye on Hollywood to see when we can start announcing.
Me too.
Yeah. Like, you tell us when that happens.
Nicole, Robert Downey Jr., get on that.
Oh gosh, I know. I didn't even ask. Did you get to meet them?
No, I didn't. I wish I did. Well, it was during, it all happened during COVID, so we were all on Zoom, but he was not on the Zoom call. No.
Okay, I was like, but on Zoom you got
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't, if he was on the Zoom call, he was not anywhere I could see him. So
he was in his Iron Man outfit.
Nice. I was excited about Greg Berlanti too. I'm like, I know that name.
Yeah, he does a lot of television.
Well, fantastic. Samantha, thank you again. Allison, of course, thank you. Everybody who is watching this live or on the replay, we are off next week because I am traveling, but we will be back the week after, and we will see you all then. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit like and subscribe.